Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host, Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
We need to end the gridlock and to stop passing the buck to future generations.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
We, the individual voters, have to do something different. We have to hold those we elected accountable.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Bill Rock, you've got it again right on a Friday morning. It is indeed time here on the John Gambling Show for Mayor Michael Bloomberg in Studio 4. Mr. Mayor, welcome aboard.
Good morning. This is an important weekend.
Very important weekend, but maybe you have a different agenda than...
Well, there's the marathon on Sunday.
Big deal.
Giants game Sunday afternoon. Over in New Jersey, although they're the New York Giants. I'll explain that to you some other time. It's a little bit complex.
You have figured that one out.
Yes.
Most of us have.
But the most important thing for everybody, and this is serious, at 2 in the morning, if you want to get up Sunday morning, you should set your clocks back. Now, most people will do it before they go to bed, or some will forget and do it on Sunday morning, or forget and not do it till
noon. Monday.
Well, they won't get that far because they'll find out that everybody shows up for dinner at the wrong time. But the reason that I mention it is it's important that people check the batteries in their smoke detectors.
Recent fires in the last week.
You know, you think about it, every year you can save a handful of lives, but, those 5 people in one family. And you could have done it, by changing... making sure the batteries are in. And if you cannot afford new batteries, the Fire Department Foundation and the Fire Department will give you free batteries for your smoke detector. And they're doing it today in Queens, Brooklyn, Staten Island, and Manhattan and the Bronx. And if you call 311, they will tell you where you can get the batteries. They're doing it tomorrow, Saturday, in Manhattan, 18th Street and 9th Avenue, around noon. But the bottom line is nobody's going to remember these things. Just call 311. Anything is better than not having batteries and having a fire and you and your family getting killed.
It seems so simple, yet too many times, in fact, almost all the times that there are serious fires, they discover that these smoke alarms do not have batteries in them or something is amiss.
Yeah, I mean, and the fire department, along with the FDNY Foundation, in partnership with the Hilton in Times Square, is doing something. So there's a whole bunch of things, but the bottom line is...
I'm sorry, you're going to fire the cannon over at the start of the race?
I'd be honored. I think they'll probably ask me to step up on the platform and do it. I do it every year, and they go on and on about how you got to pull it. It isn't that hard after you do it a few times. And it really is fun. The cannons provided by Fort Hamilton, which is just across the Verrazano Bridge from Staten Island where the race starts. And it's just amazing to see the number of people. And Bob Lieber is working, trying to expand the number of people that can run in the race. We allow something like 35,000. We think there'd be good 50,000 that want to run. The problem is, the way it works is you put a little tag on your sneaker. When you go across the start line, the computer measures it, grabs it, reads the number. When you go across the finish line, it does it. So it doesn't matter whether you start when the cannon goes off or you start an hour later. The time that you're on between start and finish is what's measured and what you see in the paper. And there are bottlenecks where the street's narrowed and people say they got to go back to a walk. You know, the super fast runners, the professionals, they're long gone. But for everybody else, and so a staggered start, some people starting at one time, some people starting half an hour later, an hour later. And why do we care? Number one, it's a great event. And if more people want to do it, why not let them do it? And number two, it's great for the economy. And people come here for a whole week and some bring their families and, you know, first times in New York, they go back and say, hey, New York was wonderful. It was the most wonderful experience. So it really is a big economic thing. And particularly in these times, we need economic stimulus. And with the dollar strengthening, our tourism business is not going to be helped by that.
My kids, two of my boys ran in it a few years ago. And if I implore any of you that have never seen this, especially over on First Avenue, but for almost any of the vantage points, it is indescribable to see what goes on up in Central Park at the finish line, up First Avenue.
About 3 years ago, I drove the course. I think Iris Weinshall, who was our transportation commissioner, Ray Kelly, and I sat in the back seat. Somebody gave the city for Jimmy Walker or something like that, one of these open touring cars. And it was fun waving. I sort of didn't And now I just go to the finish line because I want to get there quickly so I can, you know, hold the tape and give medals to the winners and that sort of stuff. But it's just amazing what you see, the flags and the spirit, and people have set up stuff and they're cheering, and everybody feels part of it. It's hard to describe.
There is nothing more invigorating than the group that starts off ahead of the big pack, and I'm talking about those that have, that are challenged physically, and I mean challenged physically sometimes, and you see them come by after 20 miles plus, and you say to yourself, my goodness, what good am I?
You know, after that, I mean, I have the same feeling. I just, when somebody says, oh, you know, I've got problems, and I think, you know, I said, and I tell you, the other time I get that feeling, we have these at Gracie Mansion, we set up a tent, and two or three times a week in the summer, have 1,000 people from different agencies or different ethnic groups, and that you get a hot dog and a hamburger and a glass of wine and a beer, and you get a picture with a mayor and all that. And it's a chance to say thank you to the city workforce or for an ethnic group, you know, before the Puerto Rican Day Parade or the Columbus Day Parade or whatever. But one of the events every year is people with disabilities. And the photo line takes a long time because, you know, some people are in wheelchairs and quadriplegics and people with an awful lot of problems. And you look at the spirit in these people, and I just think about that. Anytime, you know, you get beaten up in the press or, you know, I hit the golf ball into the woods and you say, oh, my God, I don't care what it is. As long as you and your family are alive, there are people who have an awful lot more problems than you and I do. And we are so lucky. And these people are, should be inspiration for all of us.
And they are, if we are able to engage ourselves with them. And I encourage you. Okay, I'll tell you what, we've got a lot of things to engage in here this morning. A lot of topics important to us all to talk with Mayor Michael Bloomberg about. We will. And, of course, don't forget, before we finish up, your chance to ask the questions at 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Never too early to get in the queue for that, so give us a call. Back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg in a second. All right, we continue here, 20 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is with us.
For the record, you can tell Wendy, I don't think age is catching up with her.
There you go. You just underscored what I was just saying.
It may be the cosmetics or not, but I think. But you tell Wendy, a woman in her late 20s like her shouldn't have to worry
shouldn't
about this.
Shouldn't have to worry about that. That'll you are such a charmer. Such a charmer.
Well, your wife's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. Nice of you to say.
Happens to be the best one in your family. No argument about that.
Not from this corner either. Presidential politics. I think we have an election coming up on Tuesday.
You know, I heard a number this morning. The two the presidential candidates, and I assume it means including the primary process, spent $2.3 billion. The congressional, all the races are another 2.3. I mean, it added up to something like $5.5 billion over the last 2 years. But then there was a fact that came out on the radio afterwards, which gave us a lot of comfort that we have things in perspective. The total amount of money spent on potato chips was slightly more, about $6 billion.
Okay, I guess that does put it in perspective, doesn't it? It's quite extraordinary, and a lot of people say we should have a different system. We don't need to get into that particular.
Well, the Brits
debate.
Have a system where it's all very quick, and you can call the prime minister calls an election, so there isn't a lot of time. Although they do campaign all the time, there's a shadow cabinet, shadow prime minister, and that sort of thing. But they do not spend the money. Now, keep in mind, America is a very big country. We have a lot of media, and the media that complains that we're spending too money raises their rates every time. So let's not get too carried away with.
We were disappointed that New York was not really in play this time around.
That makes a big difference.
It
if it was in play,
difference.
You'd have a real the people
means
spend
a lot of money.
You know, there's a lot of problems with what we do. On the other hand, on balance, it certainly gives the public the opportunity to participate. I think we'd be a lot better off with nonpartisan elections. We're never going to have that here. I think we'd be a lot better off if you had regional primaries where all the candidates could, and both parties could campaign in, let's say, the Northeast or the Southwest or whatever. You then have a primary of all the states in that area the same day, and the caucuses really are. They're interesting, but I think it was for a different time. I don't mean to knock the states that have them, but today the country's just much bigger, even though states are much bigger. And so if you had the regional primaries, people would have more of a say in the primary process. and the candidates would be able to target their message for a bigger swath of the country rather than trying to address the traffic light at the corner, which is literally what it gets down to in places like New Hampshire and Iowa. And that's not a good use of their time and doesn't enhance the dialogue.
Speaking of another time, isn't the way we cast our ballots of another time when you've got computers and wireless communication? And
yeah, I mean, you would think that you could do it all electronically. Now, there are people, one of the newspapers here is riled against electronic voting, arguing that you can scam it. You know, we do trillions, quadrillions of dollars worth of transactions every single day with a so low error rate and fraud rate that it's really virtually impossible to measure it. You could do the same thing. And if there's a tiny bit of fraud, well, there's fraud in everything, sadly. Paper ballots, there's fraud. Scanning, there's fraud. Hanging chads, there's fraud or misunderstanding. You would think that technology would be the answer in the end. People that say, oh, you can break in, you can hack, you can do this, you can do that. You can do it with everything, and that just means we're picking the wrong things. The trouble is, I think, when it comes down to picking electronic machines.
Well, New York has been incapable.
New York is just a whole different level of incompetence. We can't take federal government wants to give you millions, tens of millions of dollars, and we don't even take it. But even so, it becomes political as to which machine you buy. You have these boards of elections, typically made up of Republican and Democratic members, equally balanced, I guess, in most places. Keep in mind that well over a third of the people aren't a member of either party, so they don't have any say in this. But what they do is they try to pick whoever is going to politically help them or give them financing or whatever it is. But it's not done. You should have some experts, technological experts, I think, give them the job. Pick machines for the whole country. You can have a few different vendors, but we set the standards, make sure the manufacturers build to those standards, make sure there's enough testing and protection. To say that we can't do it is just preposterous in a day like this. And you got to believe that with technology, you can do a lot better. For example, fingerprinting. I mean, just in this day, in New York City, Rudy Giuliani did something in New York City. If you go back and take a look at the enormous reduction in welfare rolls in New York City, some of it was really programs that helped people. Some of it was a variety of other things. But one of the things that during the Giuliani oath, Rudy did it, but during that administration was put in, was a requirement for fingerprints. And you hit it with a fingerprint, and turned out there were a lot of people scamming the system, double dipping, not trying to take it away from anybody, but double dipping, you shouldn't allow it. And now, actually, Spitzer wanted to end the fingerprint rules for food stamps. And I screamed bloody murder and said no. And his, I don't know if it was Elliot or his administration, said, oh, well, there's no fraud, so there's no reason to have it. Well, the reason you don't have any fraud is because you do have it. And the state passed a law, and I think this is right. Check it before you go, write it, you reporters out there. But I believe that they ended the requirement for fingerprinting for food stamps throughout the entire state except for New York City. Because I made a fuss, we still do it in New York City. And it's just makes it, keeps the criminals out.
And it works.
And it works. It doesn't deprive anybody who deserves. Now, some people say, well, they don't, you know, it's a disclosure issue, civil rights issue. If you want federal monies or state monies or city monies, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing wrong with.
What do you think about this pre-voting? And we can't do it here in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, but across the country, a lot of people are doing it.
Absentee ballots are a great idea because there are legitimate reasons why you cannot show up at the polls and you should on a given day, and you shouldn't be disenfranchised. The ultimate reason, for example, is our young men and women who've gone overseas to fight and put their lives on the line so that we have the right to vote. Certainly, there's as good an example as you need of why you need absentee ballots. Whether or not you want people to vote early, just generally, I guess I sort of had some reservations about that because the candidates are still out there campaigning, making their case, and the more information you have, so unless you have a real reason for it, I'm not so sure that I think it's the greatest idea of lots of early voting. But if you can't show up, being able to file an absentee ballot is absolutely something we
should
have.
Is New York going to be set for Tuesday? They claim the numbers are awful big.
I don't know what the Board of Elections is doing, but I can tell you we have increased our security. We have more cops at the polling booths to make sure there's no fraud and to keep the machines. You make sure afterwards they're protected, so if somebody questions, you can go back and look and nobody could change the numbers. 311 is being staffed with a double shift on Tuesday, so that if you don't know where to vote, you call and they will help you. So the city's doing the things they can. We've sent some IT people to the Board of Elections to help them with their computers. Anything else they need, we'll be happy to do. We still have this issue of we've tried to give them money and they won't tell us what they want to spend it for, and they complain they don't have enough money. Well, number one, they're going to have to learn to do less with more with less, like every other city agency or state agency, and the state's going to have the same kind of problems we do. But I think we're in good shape. There will be a handful of people who say, I get there, my name's not on the rolls. That always happens. There'll be a handful of machines that break. That always happens. Now, there'll be somebody that'll spill coffee all over the front step and they can't get in. But in the context, you asked the question. Yeah,
all right, after our half-hour break, we'll get into the economy and the dollars and cents and buying up foreclosures that you've announced that you want to do. I'm going to hold that to the next segment if I could. But pre-K. You can't seem to get enough folks in pre-K.
You know, people say we need more pre-K programs, and we've spent the money. And the Albany legislature has been very helpful. You know, the Republicans in the Senate.
Barack Obama is running on this.
Shelley Silver has been come through for and his members, and the Republicans in the Assembly as well. But there's still 5,000 slots for pre-K, so please.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, part of it is people don't know, so call 311. They don't know how to do it, 311. They don't know they exist. That's why, because they're all listening to you, so now they will know and they'll call. Some people school at home. Some people just don't think education's that important, and they're wrong. They're jeopardizing is overstating it. They're not availing themselves of an opportunity that might help their children for the rest of their children's lives.
Did you see I'm sure you probably did, the stats last week? They were on my list to talk about and never got to it, about New York City's fourth graders and eighth graders' performance as relates to the rest of the world. And we were not at the high end of the list. We were somewhere in the middle.
Education, I was in Chicago last night and I talked about education to a group. When it comes to higher education, the United States is so much better than the rest of the world. There are great universities around the world, but nobody has the breadth and the quantity and the opportunities to participate, no matter what your economic level, that we have in the United States. When it comes to public school education, it's a whole, you run the spectrum from phenomenally great to abysmally terrible. What I'm trying to do is to work in New York City. We've got a union here that, you can blame the unions around the country, but I can only tell you my real experience is here. In the last 6.5 years, we've negotiated 3 contracts. Teachers here are now paid as well as teachers in the suburbs. They're among the higher paid teachers in the country, certainly probably the highest of any big city. And in return for that, we have performance pay. We have changed a lot of the work rules. They teach longer hours. They teach more days. And they're doing a better job. It keeps getting better. Are we going to solve all the problems of public education in New York City? No, but we're going in that direction. And I think the rest of the country's just got to understand we have to have accountability. You have to test kids so you know what they're doing. Teachers can't change what they do in the classroom unless they know whether it's working. That's the whole idea of tests. And I said last night, people say, oh, there's too many of these high-stakes tests. You want a high-stake test for a kid, wait until the kid gets into high school and has got to decide whether they hang out with that kid who says he may have a gun or something, or there's a sex they've got to deal with and staying in school they've got to deal with. A lot of really high-stakes decisions that teenagers have to make. High-stakes test, whether they can pass the math test or not in the fourth grade, is not a high-stakes test. And if you can't pass the math test, Boy, I'd rather know if I were a parent and a teacher. Kids don't think about it that way, but they should want to know. And get back, you got to learn it.
You got to learn it. You're absolutely right. We're going to get into the economics of where we are on this final day of October with Mayor Michael Bloomberg in just a moment. Right now, though, on the half hour, let me remind you. Good morning to you all on this last day of October. Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambler here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. The economy is always a focal point in these conversations. Yesterday you announced a program relating to foreclosures here in the city.
Well, what we can do in the city is we can't solve the national problems, banks and financing them and bailing out or subsidizing or facilitating or giving them liquidity or whatever you want to talk about. That's at a national level. A state level, they can do some. But fundamentally in the city, what we can do is we can give people advice, and that really, believe it or not, is valuable to a lot of them. People get in trouble, don't know what to do. Nobody suggests they shouldn't pay their debts, but telling them how they can avail themselves of combining loans or getting somebody to give them an extension or that sort of thing. When people lose their homes, we don't have the money to go bail out everybody. But if one house in a neighborhood, the people lose the house and it sits there empty, it can destroy the value of the whole neighborhood. So there is a program we have. We buy houses for our new housing marketplace, renovate them, and then resell them. And we don't give more mortgages, but we arrange for people to get mortgages. That's another thing we're trying to do. And our experience so far is I think we've given something like we've arranged 17,000 mortgages, and we've only had roughly half a dozen foreclosures in 3 or 4 years. And the reason is we're very careful. You can't get a mortgage where the debt service is more than 30% of your income. We take a second.
Oh, you mean you're doing it the old-fashioned way?
We take a second mortgage on it, so people can't say, I'm going to take the equity out and run away. They have to keep it in there. It is low-income housing so that the debt service isn't all that much. You know, people don't get so expanded when they're out there. So we do that. We've got a training program and matching small businesses with people who are looking for jobs, a website to pull together jobs around the city and the financial sector. Each one of these things will help a little bit. And on balance, they're going to make a difference. Will it solve all of the city's unemployment problems? No. What you need there is to have confidence come back. Now, I think my perception is all of the programs that the federal government and other federal governments around the world, all of these programs are starting to work. If you take a look at the stock market, it is not collapsing, and the volatility, while still extraordinarily high, is much lower. We had 3 weeks ago, in 1 week, virtually all the financial markets in the world went down 20%. That would have been 2 or 3 years change if you go back. That volatility has stopped, and in fact, the banks seem to be more willing to lend. Then you can see that in the interest rates they charge. The problem is people don't want to borrow. And that's the next big problem. And it's different than the financial services sector problems. This is a crisis of confidence throughout the country, in fact, throughout the world, where people have lost a lot of their savings, retirement funds and that sort of thing, are worried about their jobs, are worried about how they pay their mortgage if they lose their jobs. And so what they're doing is they're not going to restaurants, they're not traveling, they're not buying cars, and all of that. It takes a lot longer to filter through the economy. It's still growing, not declining. And then it's going to take the country a lot longer to get people to change their mindset and start going out and spending. So if you say to me, what should you do with your own money? I'd say, John, you know, we're going into recession here. You should be careful. Don't be as expansive. Take the shorter vacation. Don't buy the most expensive car. Maybe you could postpone that extra thing, use the old lawnmower a little bit longer. On the other hand, if you believe me and you do that, you're helping to create the recession. And so that's the conundrum. I think we're going into that period, and I think whether it's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, nobody really knows. It is not going to be a few months, and it's not something that our central bankers and treasury departments around the world can overnight cure. And it's every place. It's not just here. It is today. There's a bunch of stories about in the Emirates, Kuwait, Dubai,
Bahrain.
Abu Dhabi, Bahrain. Sure. This is where all of the oil, oil prices have gone from 140 to 60, roughly. roughly. And so their revenues are way down. Russia, very dependent on commodities. Their stock market's down 75%. And all these people who had all this money just don't have that money anymore. It's just literally, it was created out of thin air and it disappears into thin air. That's just the way the money supply works.
How do you feel? I mean, you're associated with Wall Street as closely as anybody. What do you think about the federal government's programs and the fact that some of that money appears to be going to pay off CEOs and others?
A lot of these banks, I assume, have legal obligations. They made contracts in the past. They may not have been, in retrospect, intelligent. Maybe prospectively they weren't intelligent, but they have legal obligations. Also, we live in a very competitive world. And so if we have a law here that says you can't pay your people over a certain limit, those people are going to go to work elsewhere, and the last thing you want is the best and the brightest to go elsewhere. Now, other countries have the same thing going in the other direction, and I think there is an issue here of some of these boards have made deals that made no sense at all, outrageous terms on golden parachutes. If you didn't perform, you still get your golden parachute. But, you know, the same legislators who are complaining, their pensions, they've got to commit triple murder before they lose their pension. I think most of them can go to jail and they'd still have it. So it's a little bit, you know, of hypocritical. It's a populist issue. Everybody's yelling and screaming. The real problem, the real abuses, and not the excess there. There are plenty of things that are infinitely more important that we should focus on. We've got to get the economy going again. We've got to restore confidence. We want these banks, investment banks, somebody, to start doing business again because that's our future.
The president has been shouting at the banks, okay, we gave you all this money, now do something.
That doesn't work overnight. That's the thing. One of our elected officials was screaming, price of gasoline isn't coming down as fast as the price of oil. Yeah, it follows by about 2 or 3 weeks. Why? The local gasoline station buys gasoline and they pay, let's say, $2.50 a gallon. They sell it for $3. Well, they're not going to go sell it for $2.50 even if they could because they'd lose their money. So they wait until they sell up. The next tank of gas they get from the big tanker is at $2. That's when it happens. So these things don't happen overnight. They don't happen perfectly. Not everything goes together. But I think that whether you could have done it better or not, nobody will ever know. The actions that Paulson and the Treasury and Bernanke and the Fed took, along with the actions that were taken overseas, because we don't live in a world where just we could solve this problem, everybody's got to work together, seem to have calmed the nerves of the financial markets to a great extent. Doesn't mean it's over. Seems to have stopped the forced liquidation when hedge funds and college endowment funds have been one of the big problems here because they've had to dump stocks. They still have to, they're not getting any gifts and they still got to pay tuition and give scholarships. In this market, they have more needs for cash to give scholarships at the very time they're not getting any gifts from old alumni, so they've got to liquidate.
One of the fears that I have, and it's expressed by others, is that we've started down a slippery slope of giving money away for lots of things. Governor Corzine and Governor Patterson in Washington before Charlie Rangel's committee this week asking for the federal government to help the states. Is that a good idea?
Well, what Governor Patterson said was that New York State sends a lot more money to Washington than they get back, and he thought that was unfair, and he thought that Washington should rectify that. You can rest assured that I will remind Governor Patterson that New York City does that to New York State, and if he thinks it's a good idea, he could lead by example and help us. He's going to rue those words. But he's right. He couldn't be more right. And I saw a news story yesterday. There's a lot of talk that the federal government has to provide funds to help GM and Chrysler because they'll go out of business without.
Good idea or bad?
Well, but the fascinating thing is I saw a story, somebody representing Ford Motor Company supposedly said, well, if you do it for them, you got to do it for us.
That's the slope I'm talking about.
This country, if there's lots of jobs, we are going to bail them all out, I think, is whether it's right or wrong, good or bad policy, it's the politics of it. And incidentally, if you go back and take a look at Lehman, it was in retrospect, I don't know that I would have been smart enough to see it any more than anybody else, but in retrospect, it was a bad decision not to bail them out because the cost to us is much greater now. Now, that you can say, well, that's unfair and they don't deserve it and that sort of thing. Yeah, that's like, you know, it doesn't matter whether it was fair or not. We would have been better off and the whole system would have been better off and you wouldn't have had some of the chaos in the stock markets if you had done that.
Yes, I've heard that expressed. Bear Stearns as well, possibly, though it was a slightly different situation. Mr. Mayor, we've got some folks on the phone that want to ask you a question. We will get to them. 800-321-0710. Straight ahead. All right, 6 minutes before 9 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, we have some folks on the line that would like to ask you a question. 800-321-0710. Going to start with line number 5 here. Francis, you've got the mayor. Mr. Mayor, pick up your headphone there. Francis, go ahead. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. My question is, I had heard Mayor Bloomberg mention on the news yesterday that the city would be launching a website to assist laid-off financial workers.
Yes, we're going to do that, and it should be up within the next, sometime I think next week, could be the week after, but we're very close to having it going. And if you call 311, they'll tell you. John, remind me by next Friday, I'll make sure we talk about it on the show.
Okay. Francis, that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
You're
thank
welcome.
You,
hopefully it helps.
Let us go down to Linda out in Staten Island. Linda, you've got the mayor. Go.
Oh, hi. Good morning. I'm calling on behalf of my husband. He's a small contract. He works in all the boroughs, and he needs his tools at his disposal. His idea is to be able to obtain a temporary parking pass so he can park and use his tools as he needs them because he gets a lot of parking tickets. He can't leave his van 2 blocks away. It's not feasible, and people can steal his tools. I mean, I know the city makes a lot of money on his parking tickets, but it's more of a good faith thing to be able to go buy these permits.
We do have, actually, Linda, a program for big companies like FedEx or UPS, for example, and they negotiate with the Department of Finance a blanket rate
for parking tickets.
Sure. I mean, it's a practical thing. They've got to pull up, and if they had to go park, you could never use them. They just cost too much. It just isn't practical. For small vendors, I don't think we really have a good answer to it. The problem is, Linda, everybody would want one, and then people abuse it. It isn't the lack of the revenue, although revenue certainly helps, particularly in this day and age, but it is how you would police it and who would get it. And it is very controversial. We have cut back. Ed Schuyler, our deputy mayor, has worked very hard at cutting back the number of parking placards that city workers get. I've always argued, look, a city worker is the same as somebody in the private sector. As a matter of fact, we city workers work for them. So if anybody gets a benefit, it should be the private sector, not the city workers. But if you have a real need, for example, an inspector has to come up and we complain, oh, they didn't get to inspect this. Well, they couldn't find a parking place. And so you say, okay, we'll give you a parking permit. And Skyla's cut the number down dramatically, 100,000, 75,000.
I was reading the federal government. The U.S. federal government is a big
scuffle. A nightmare. If you go down near City Hall where there's courthouses and everything, they just park every place. And the law says we can't ticket them, and you go and say this isn't right, and they just sort of, they don't even look at you. They just say that it is nothing we can do about it, or, you know, we have to have it. We're the government, and we're here to help.
Exactly.
Thank you very
don't
much.
Don't bother me. Go
Incidentally,
away.
Just to show you that our staff here is phenomenally efficient, our ace crackerjack press secretary, Stu Loser, just handed me a note and says that the soonest the website will be up is about 1 month, but I will talk to them and see if we can't move that up.
All right. Thanks a lot for the telephone call. Let's see here. Let's go to Kathy out in Long Island. Kathy, you've got the mayor. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
I'm calling to tell you I want to thank you for taking on this very difficult leadership role in a really hard economic time. It takes somebody with a lot of guts and somebody who's top at the head of anything. You're going to steer us through this, I'm sure.
Well, you're nice to say so. It's a great challenge, and hopefully the people will want me to continue, but whatever. I'm going to do the best job I can. It is, Kathy, it's not going to be easy. And everybody says...
You know, you have somebody there who knows what they're doing.
Well, you're nice to say that. Everybody says we have to address it, and I want you to address it. But then, of course, they don't like you when you do. I was gave a speech last night, and I said, you know, these steps of City Hall, the people are protesting. But when you walk up and stick your hand out and say, hi, I'm Mike Bloomberg, most of them drop their signs and say, oh, let me get my camera out. I need a picture of my kid. I voted for you. I'm working for you.
Well, here's my question, Mayor.
Yes.
You just said that the government's here to help. I'm a small business owner in the Hunts Point Terminal Market,
yep.
And the market is owned by New York City. And recently they did two broadcasts on the potential and the vulnerability of terrorism attacks on the Hunts Point Terminal Market, which is the biggest source in the tri-state area to feed the people.
Kath, we're running out of time. What's the question?
The question is, what kind of advice and what kind of... can you give us to secure and protect this market?
Well, I think, number one, the police department certainly understands the risks that all parts of our city, there are lots of places that are vulnerable, and so far, hopefully forever, we'll be able to make sure that nobody does attack us, and the last thing we need is put people's lives in jeopardy, and then the collateral damage of jeopardizing the economy, which is what would happen here. I think the police department is well aware, and they're making sure that the security at Hunts Point, like at other places, you particularly focus your security on a handful of vulnerable sites in terms of the facility, but more importantly, wherever there are large congregations of people. Hunts Point has a lot of people all together. Police department focuses on that. And, if you go to a football game or a baseball game or whatever, that's another kind. A lot of people together, we focus.
All right, Mr. Mayor, our time is up. I hear the theme coming up behind us. Thank you very much. And, have yourself a good week. Vote many times as you like.
I plan to vote once, but I plan to vote early, and looking forward to it. Everybody should vote. It's something many people in the world don't have the opportunity to do.
And have yourself a nice weekend.
Set your clocks back and change your batteries.
All right. We'll see you on Monday. That's going to do it for us. Important.